From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. Believe it or not, Treasure Island is expected to house some 25,000 people in about 15 years. Developers working with the city are building a whole new neighborhood on what used to be a naval base in San Francisco Bay. The views are breathtaking, but the traffic on the Bay Bridge is bad now, and climate change is raising the sea level, and there are still concerns about the comprehensiveness of the Navy cleanup. We'll ask all the hard questions about Treasure Island and take your calls, too, in this hour of Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. Are you ready for a brand new San Francisco neighborhood on Treasure Island? Let's do the numbers. 8,000 housing units, 2 hotels, 550,000 square feet of commercial space, 300 acres of parkland, a ferry terminal, and maybe a Star Wars museum. Well, we have the right people in studio with us this morning to discuss what's ahead. We've got Bob Beck, Treasure Island Director of the Treasure Island Development Authority. Thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
And Chris Meany, Managing Partner of Wilson Meany. The firm is a partner in Treasure Island Community Development, the master developer of Treasure Island. Thank you for being here.
Oh, nice to be here, Rachel.
And last but not least, Tanu Sankalila, Associate Professor in the Department of Art and Architecture and Program Director of Urban Studies for the University of San Francisco, also co-editor with Lynn Horiuchi of a forthcoming essay collection called Urban Reinventions, San Francisco's Treasure Island. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Rachel.
Well, Bob Beck, why don't you start us off? Where are we now in the process?
Thank you, Rachel. May of 2015, the Treasure Island Development Authority took the first transfer of land from the Navy, including the northern half of Yerba Buena Island and about 60% of the area of Treasure Island. And we've been working with Treasure Island Community Development, the developer, to finalize a lot of the plans for the infrastructure improvements that are going to be taking place in that first area of work. And the developer has now awarded demolition contracts to clear the structures that are on Yerba Buena Island, as well as the structures in the first area of development on Treasure Island, and will be beginning geotechnical work and other infrastructure improvements this fall.
Is it a total clearing of the property, or will there still be some old buildings left when all of this is done?
We are going to be preserving a number of historic structures, including the administration building or Building 1, the horseshoe-shaped building that people may be familiar with when they first come to Treasure Island, as well as hangars 2 and 3, the large hangars that date back to the Golden Gate International Exposition, and the officers' quarters on Yerba Buena Island that actually predate the construction of Treasure Island.
And, you know, I guess for so many people, when they think of Treasure Island, they think about the fact that it is an island, and they think about that, you know, exit off the bridge, and wonder, how is it going to happen that 25,000 people will be getting on and off this piece of land without causing major havoc to traffic?
Yeah. Well, one of the objectives of the transportation plan for Treasure Island is that half of all trips on and off the island be via public transit. There will be new AC transit service from the island to the East Bay, as well as a new ferry terminal with service to downtown San Francisco, as well as an additional transit line into San Francisco, in addition to the line that currently runs from the island to the Transbay Transit Center. There will also be new on and off ramps to the Bay Bridge that'll be opening this fall. The eastbound ramps are being constructed by Caltrans and the westbound ramps by the San Francisco Transportation Authority. And both those projects should be wrapping up and opening to vehicle traffic this fall.
Chris Meany, you know, I suppose many people, when they think about this project, they start to try to compare it to other really large projects. Gosh, Mission Bay, just a few blocks away from the KQED studios. What is this thing going to look like? What will people be able to compare it to?
Well, our goal was to create, as you said in your introduction, a new neighborhood. And I think that Mission Bay is fair to think of as a new neighborhood in San Francisco. But really, our modeling was on places like North Beach and other established neighborhoods in San Francisco. So 8,000 homes will be arrayed in primarily 4 to 5 story buildings, the sort of predominant housing type in San Francisco, but with a limited number of taller buildings to really give us articulation of the skyline. Importantly, though, we're taking that neighborhood and we're condensing it to and placing it on only about half of the island's footprint so that the other half can be parks. And a very important aspiration of this project is that it is both a whole new neighborhood to give us this much-needed expansion of our housing stock in San Francisco, but to actually also have it be amenity for the rest of the city. So the public parks at Treasure Island are going to be the largest addition to the public park system in San Francisco since Golden Gate Park was constructed.
And you're also planning to spend something like $50 million on public art? Or the city's
You pick out a relatively small number in the scheme of Treasure Island. Forgetting building any buildings, the budget to prepare the island for its new housing stock is going to cost about $1.4 billion. And of that $1.4 billion, all of the infrastructure on the island will be replaced. The island will be seismically strengthened and prepared for sea level rise. It'll also have this great public park system. And as Bob said, very importantly, it'll have a very robust transportation system. All of that, along with public art, is part of that what we call horizontal development number of $1.4 billion.
Bob Beck, can you take up what Chris Meaney was just saying there about seismically prepared for earthquakes and one presumes prepared for sea level rise with climate change? How does one do that exactly?
Yeah. So the geotechnical program on Treasure Island has really four separate components. The first is the causeway that connects Treasure Island to Yerba Buena Island will be reconstructed. So it'll be partially excavated. Cement soil mixed walls will be installed beneath it, and then it'll be reconstructed upwards. Then the island itself, the perimeter of the island, will be reinforced to prevent lateral spread in a seismic event from preventing the island to moving out into the bay. And then the development footprint of the island itself will be subject to two different approaches. The first will be what is called surcharging, the importation of large volumes of soil to compress the bay mud to minimize the long-term settlement after development. And then the other component is a vibratory compaction of the fill materials of which the island was constructed. And that is really to address liquefaction potential in the event of an earthquake.
Tanu Sankalia, can you tell us what your study, your research of Treasure Island has consisted of?
Yeah, Rachel, you were saying we were looking forward, but one of the things that we do in our book is also look back. And I think that's really important in the sense that in this moment, as we see a new city coming up on Treasure Island, the past serves as a kind of backcloth against which you can sort of look at this current development. So what was the entire Navy tenure like? What was the fare like? What was the making of the island itself like? And one of the things that we find is that Treasure Island has become, over a period of several decades, a kind of a projection platform for San Francisco's urban ambitions ever since its making. I mean, it was conceived at a time of during air travel when there was competition within the bay for airports and competition across the West Coast for airports. Then the fare itself, and then this whole period of defense and of the Cold War. And so it really has served through architecture, through war, and through utopian planning as a kind of a projection platform for the city's urban ambitions.
So I guess it bears saying the obvious that clearly what we value right now is housing?
Yes, and also this whole idea of large-scale capital-intensive projects, you know, which are sort of predicated on sustainability and these ideas. And it's very consistent with a kind of a global groundswell for these kinds of projects. And you can look at projects in the Middle East like Masdar City, which is outside Abu Dhabi, which is also this eco-city. There's the few eco-cities in China like Dongtan, Lingang. But they're very, very large-scale capital-intensive projects and mainly and often, I should say, created out of huge amounts of state power. So state power is extremely important in creating and implementing these projects.
Chris Meaney, I guess you would say that it works slightly differently here in a democracy. You had a fair bit of fighting to get through to get to this stage.
Rachel, I'll comment on that, and then I do want to go back to Tanu's comment that that there is a little bit of a utopian lining to sort of the thinking about Treasure Island, because I think it's an interesting thought. But listen, we're all of us who live and make San Francisco our home know that our real estate and land use issues are challenging, and that, you know, we everybody tends to take them very passionately. What I would take away from our experience in Treasure Island was not the negative part of it. I think this was the first large project that went through a city process in which it set up at the beginning to go and touch base with the Board of Supervisors on an advisory basis while it was still being planned. We had some 450 public meetings. Is that the way everybody wants to spend their time? No. Do we wish that there had been, maybe a little less controversy at a moment? Sure. But I think what we can celebrate is that as a community, Treasure Island was actually a process that worked. We had a lot of public input. It affected the plans. And I think, while not everybody, 100% of the people will be happy, I think the vast majority of this community is happy with this transparent process that took place at Treasure Island. And now I want to just loop back to this utopian comment. And it's interesting. So we're really privileged here. In addition to working with, you know, the city of San Francisco, our group, which includes Lennar and Stockbridge Capital and Kenwood Investments, we have looked at this. How do we plan out this some 400 acres of land? And with this public process saying, please be aspirational, please reach out, and sort of this is where I tie back to the utopian ideal here. How can we do something that is best in the nation in terms of creating a new place? And so out of that public process and in the spirit of sort of creating an ideal new place, 400 acres with almost all of it a fresh sheet of paper in terms of design, new infrastructure, being able to orient the street so that it maximizes solar exposure while shielding from the wind, buildings that are contemporary but embracing of the pedestrian realm, public parks that are broken up into a whole series of different uses that can bring in people from all over the community. Our group was very lucky to have this emerge from the public process. And I have to say, as much as you sort of, you know, it seems a little strange to say utopian, there is very much an idea of Treasure Island being kind of an idealized new neighborhood.
One question I have to ask Bob Beck is the question of radiation. This was messy soil. The Navy was on it. And, you know, during a period of time when let's give them the possibility that they didn't really understand the problems of making a toxic mess. Can we feel truly confident? Is there outside confirmation that the Navy has cleaned up everything there was to be concerned about?
Well, the Navy work continues on the island. They do have a number of areas where they're continuing their remediation efforts. And in their remediation efforts, they do quite extensive sampling to try and identify where there is contamination. And there are differing sources of contamination from the dry cleaning facilities to fueling stations to areas that they actually used as disposal areas. But they have extensive photographic records as well as sampling that they've been doing to identify the types of contamination that exist and to develop plans for its remediation. And they're overseen in that effort by the State Department of Toxic Substances Control. And DTSC is advised in their role by the California Department of Public Health on radiological matters specifically. So there is both an exhaustive effort to identify what needs to be removed as well as extensive oversight by the state. In terms of the radiological materials themselves, the majority of the material that's been found on Treasure Island consists of radium 226, and that particular isotope was used by the Navy in a number of ways. Primarily, there were some materials that were disposed of in those solid waste disposal areas are the materials that have been identified and removed over the course of this.
So not just covered up with soil, but literally taken off the island.
Yeah. Oh, yes, absolutely. The goals of the remediation program are to remove all of the material off of the island, and so that when it is transferred to the city, it's what they call released for unrestricted reuse, so that we can then go in and develop the programs that have been identified and prepared by the city for the planned reuse, whether it's residential, commercial, or open space.
Anything you want to add there, Chris Meany?
No, but I want to emphasize what Bob has said, but I'll add one thing. The emphasis is that the Navy has lived up to their obligations to clean the island, or are living up to them, and all of their efforts are being overseen by the state of California, and we are getting free release on the parcels that are finished. It's also true that when people use words like radiation, it conjures up Dr. Strangelove images here. And we should remember that Treasure Island was ever just a people moving way station. And it did not have, you know, radiation is a background element behind us. And so it's everywhere.
You know, and so to counter that, it is everywhere, especially in California with its military history. To not be concerned, you know, it's not something to be tossed aside.
No, but there's a difference between saying a place in which there was weaponry and a place in which there was glow-in-the-dark paint used. And we oftentimes don't make those differentiations, and I think the public would be interested in that kind of differentiation, and that at Treasure Island, what we're talking about is glow-in-the-dark paint, not weaponry.
Will there be – oh, yes. Go ahead, Tim.
No,
yeah.
I mean, Chris, what happened also was, yes, it moved a lot of people. Treasure Island moved 4.5 million people, you know, during World War II. Soldiers who moved to and from the Pacific Theater. But after Second World War, after 1945, when it really became Naval Station Treasure Island, it was a training and distribution center. It was called TADSEN. And part of TADSEN was to set up a series of training schools on the island. And one of the schools was the Damage Control School, as it was called. And the Damage Control School was to train soldiers and naval personnel in atomic, biological, and chemical defense. And what the Navy was more scared about at that time was not just ships being directly in a nuclear explosion, but they were afraid of the lingering effects of radiation. And so one of the things they set up was this damage control school. And they set up a mock ship there, an above-ground mock ship, which was called the USS Pandemonium. And the USS Pandemonium was built out of scrap metal, and it was often contaminated. It had to be contaminated. And they contaminated in two ways, one with cesium-137, which was a sort of a powder, which went off like a dust. And they also had a solution of bromine, which was a radioactive liquid, which was in tanks, and it would be actually thrown into a port into the nooks and crannies of that mock ship. And soldiers and naval personnel had to go in there and clean them up. And that's to train them how to, like, decontaminate a ship in the event of a nuclear explosion. So that's something that that ship was on the northeast of the island in up to 1968, and then was dragged across to the the northeast of the island, so northwest to northeast. And they moved the ship when they created a new master plan for Treasure Island. The Navy had an entire new master plan in 1966 called the Treasure Island Master Development Plan for the Navy. And they moved it so that it would be downwind, so that it wouldn't pick up the wind. The wind would go into the bay. And both these sites were contaminated. And after they moved the ship, they actually built housing on the site where it was. So they raked up a bunch of that material, you know, for foundations for new buildings. And so those are the areas that are most contaminated and still need to be, you know, they are being cleaned up, as both Chris and Bob have said. But there were some serious radioactive materials that were on the island.
Chris Meany, will there be any attempt to sort of explain the history and explain the science of the history, with I don't know, some form of public art, some kind of museum exhibit?
Absolutely, and in many different ways. We have, again, this wonderful public park system that's going to be created that includes a promenade all the way around the island as well as these different sections. And we think it's a wonderful opportunity to build in storytelling elements into that public park structure. We also have included in the programming for the administration building an opportunity for the Treasure Island Museum to come and tell a history of really more of the island's engineering, military, and sustainable story. So, in terms of art, it is to us a really important element to the kind of placemaking, particularly in the village core. And so you'll see a lot of that, and I think it's going to be very elevating of the experience.
You know, we hinted at it at the beginning of the show and have barely touched on it. Bob Beck, apparently Mayor Ed Lee is lobbying George Lucas to bring in a Star Wars museum. What would be different about the process than if George Lucas, for instance, were pitching in the Presidio, where he failed in the past to make his case?
Well, I think, there's the Presidio is undergoing its own process to identify and create a community and a place there. I'm not as familiar with the history of that program, but for Treasure Island, having a museum was one of the uses that was anticipated along the waterfront potentially. And so it more integrates with the open space program and the
imagine from the beginning.
Yeah.
We'll continue the conversation in our second half hour. We're talking with Bob Beck, Chris Meany, and Tanu Sankalila about Treasure Island, its past, its present, and its future. Call us at 866-733-6786 to join the conversation. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Myra. We're talking about the massive redevelopment of Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island with three people who know all about it. Tanu Sankalia, who is Associate Professor in the Department of Art and Architecture at the University of San Francisco, co-editor of a forthcoming essay collection called Urban Reinventions, San Francisco's Treasure Island. Bob Beck, Treasure Island Director of the Treasure Island Development Authority. Chris Meany, Managing Partner of Wilson Meany. The firm is a partner in Treasure Island Community Development, the master developer of Treasure Island. And hopefully you, dear listener, give us a ring at 866-733-6786 and join the conversation. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Tweet to @KQEDForum. When we left off, Bob Beck, you were going to tell us about the process involved in putting quite possibly a tourism magnet on Treasure Island. There's talk about a Star Wars museum, perhaps. George Lucas coming back from Chicago to pitch San Francisco on taking this museum after all.
Yeah. The George Lucas and his team are exploring their options after both continuing in Chicago or perhaps returning to the Bay Area or Southern California. And on Treasure Island, we're evaluating what that would mean in terms of process and interaction. But it was envisioned that there would be potentially a museum within the program along the Western waterfront. And so we're evaluating the ability for the Lucas Museum to fit in that footprint and be integrated into our plan, and how we may need to adapt our infrastructure plans, particularly for this first phase, as if it were to go forward.
And Chris Meany, you were saying earlier that there is a plan to have some kind of museum, whatever that form may ultimately end up being.
That's right. The idea here is to create a whole place in which there is everything, residential, retail, services, and cultural institutions, including support services, but also enrichment services. And so we have a couple of zones set aside which would house that kind of institution. It's really – we'd be welcoming, but it's what the city fathers, the mayor and the board of supervisors really want to see here. That's what we'll wait and adopt what they come forth with.
More to come. Let's head to the phones and Dave in San Francisco.
Two arguably connected questions. One is I haven't heard any discussion of affordable housing and the percentages that are going to be affordable. And another question coming from an architect is equitable, quote-unquote, equitable distribution of architectural commissions and also equitable distribution of contracts for smaller time contractors, which I think is a real problem in my industry. It's a real problem in the city as a whole, where Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill, to be quite frank, eats up everything. But I really have no idea who you've given architectural commissions to, and I'd be really interested to hear some of that.
Well,
thanks a lot.
Thank you for those questions, Dave. Let's break it up. Bob, you want to take affordable housing?
Yeah. So the affordable housing program on Treasure Island calls for 25% of the housing to be developed as affordable housing. As part of the market rate development, Treasure Island Community Development will be developing 5% inclusionary affordable. And then there are
And explain for us what that means.
So there will be some affordable units built within the market rate developments. And then there are also 20 parcels that were identified in the housing plan for the Treasure Island Development Authority and the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative to develop the balance of the affordable housing on. We're currently looking at the prospects of would it be possible to increase the percentage of affordable housing above 25%. The program was hard hit by the dissolution of redevelopment. Originally, we did have a 30% affordable housing program.
So that's like a separate budget that's going to be paying for a lot of that housing?
We're using tax increment that flows from the project area to help finance both the infrastructure as well as the affordable housing program. And when redevelopment was dissolved and we are forced to rely on just the local share of tax increment, the pool of public funding was decreased.
And what's the story on Yerba Buena Island?
So Yerba Buena Island is going to be have a limited footprint for development. So there will be a maximum of 300 residential units developed on Yerba Buena Island. Those are proposed to be developed by Treasure Island Community Development. They'll have the 5% inclusionary affordable within them.
Chris Meany, you want to take the second half of Dave's questions, the one about opportunities for smaller-scale architects?
Sure. Well, Dave raises a good point and a point that we have had at the forefront of our thinking for the past decade while we've been planning this, both because we think building a neighborhood and building a community is about making sure that the people that are already here are participating in it, making sure that small local businesses can participate what we're doing. But it's also in terms of the final product. We're looking for something that is real, and real things are built by, you know, many hands. And one of the ways we do that is we bring in teams, understanding that we both want local flavor and we're undertaking one of the most technologically complex projects here. So interesting. Dave wasn't so fond of SOM, but SOM was involved in the master planning of this island, but SOM did not work alone. We had them partner with a firm that was once known as SMWM, a local San Francisco-based firm of a smaller but just of superb talent. Now they become part of Perkins and Will, but those two jointly created a master plan. We aren't yet to designing the buildings, so but we have designed all of the open spaces and the landscape. That's where we are right now. So we have a program that's very robust in terms of the landscape architecture, in terms of those spaces. So we have a firm, CMG, Kevin Conger, a wonderful local landscape architecture firm taking the lead. But then what we've done is for individual parks, we brought in some of the Bay Area's best. So Andy Cochran is doing a great public plaza for us in front of building the administration building. Walter Hood is doing a spectacular park on top of Yerba Buena Island. We have Cheryl Barton, and we have some of the different design studios at AECOM participating in some of the promenades. So we will bring that same approach to the building design, but with everything we've done, we've had multiple very talented teams, and I think the product shows for it.
Let's hit the phones again and talk to Aaliyah in Oakland.
Hi, I have a question about the relocation efforts of people who live on Treasure Island. I know that it is heavily vacated. I mean, heavily people who have low income.
There's about 2,000 people who've been living on these islands. Am I correct in thinking it's about that? Mostly
right,
affordable housing?
About 2,500. Yeah. And if there's only about 300 spaces available for those people, I mean, not focusing on the negative, how does that help them and where are they relocating and how are you focusing on that when this project is going to bring billions maybe of dollars, you know, to the city of San Francisco?
Great question, Aaliyah. Bob Beck, you want to tackle that one?
Yeah. So we have a total of 5 housing providers on the island: Swords to Plowshares, HealthRight 360, Community Housing Partnership, and Catholic Charities are all providing affordable housing under a collaborative that we call the Treasure Island Homeless Development Initiative. And they have 250 households on the island right now. And then we have about an additional 400 households that are in market rate housing. It is affordable market rate housing, but it's market rate housing, and that's managed by the villages at Treasure Island. For the residents of the tie-dye units, we will be working with tie-dye. Tie-dye will be developing those housing providers will be developing 435 of the replacement units, and it's the intention to transition everybody who's in a current tie-dye unit into one of those future tie-dye units.
And what about the people who there won't be room for in the new development?
Well, again, for the market rate residents, all of our market rate residents who were here in 2011 when the entitlements were adopted are going to be transitioned into future, have the opportunity, they'll have the choice to transition into units in the future development. It's only those residents that have come to the island since the entitlements were approved in 2011 and into market rate housing that won't have an opportunity to transition to the future.
And they have been given relocation funds, although in this real estate market, it doesn't take you very far.
The market rate households who are relocating, they have a choice of accepting a unit in the future development or relocation funds. For the people who have moved to the island since the entitlements, there wouldn't be a relocation benefit for them because they're coming into the situation with fully informed on what the plans and the timelines are for development.
Aaliyah, thank you so much for that question. Robin writes, we're getting a lot of questions and comments about traffic. The bridge can't handle the additional traffic, Robin says. And Darcy asks, when will the BART stop be built? It sounds, Bob, like you're on the hot seat from a lot of this show. There are concerns, you know, will it be enough? Will it be implemented soon enough?
Yeah. So there's many elements to the transportation program on the island. BART is not one of them. Although the BART is studying a second bay tube, it's not envisioned that that would ever connect to Treasure Island. So there is, I mentioned earlier, the overall objective is that half of the trips on and off the island be via public transit. But for vehicle traffic coming on and off the island, there will be metering at the future ramps, as well as we'll be instituting congestion management pricing or tolling on and off of the island. So all of that is both intended to help drive people from vehicles to public transit, but also to help subsidize the public transit that will be provided on the island. The AC Transit service is expected to start with the first new developments coming to the island. The ferry service will be delayed a few years, but by 2022-2023 timeframe, we estimate that the ferry service will be commencing at some level. And then we'll be increasing the frequency of the service on the existing Treasure Island to Transbay line, and eventually introducing a second Muni line into the city. So again, there are a number of elements here intended to mitigate or limit the impacts onto the bridge.
Tanu, any thoughts you want to add?
Well, I'm just. It goes back to the time of the fair when there were 12,000 cars parked on the island on a single day. And that was the age of the automobile. And one could imagine people making the trip from San Francisco, you know, to the island. If you're looking at 8,000 units, you're looking at least a car per unit minimum. And I think if someone's buying a $1.5 million, $2 million condo, maybe two cars, plus visitor parking and parking for all the other users. So we're looking at a similar amount of cars, again, on the island. So it's a challenge. It definitely is a challenge. But we are definitely adding a number of cars there on the island.
Chris Meany, anything you want to add? I mean, it's often said, you know, we like to think of ourselves as an ecologically minded community, but the truth is a lot of people have cars, want to use cars, need to use cars. Where will all those cars go?
Well, you've got it exactly right, but you have to take it in the greater context. So to Tanu said something, you know, some people would like to have two cars, right? Well, in a Treasure Island, we're only building one parking space for each of the units. So 8,000 homes will have 8,000 parking spaces. And yes, there will be some support parking for the public open space and for the retail. So without a doubt, cars will be there. What we as a community that are really grappling with these issues need to understand, though, is that cars have a place, though they shouldn't be our primary way of getting around. So for us, it's yes, there's every resident can have one parking space, but we want to give them a robust set of alternatives so that there's a free on-island shuttle. You can go anywhere on the island with a shuttle bus without ever getting in your car. You have ferries and bus service that get you back to the city. And, you know, those of us in today's age, even when I live in the city, I have a car. I only use the car to do things like pick up big loads of groceries and to take trips outside of the city because it just makes more sense to not be in my car. And that's what we're looking at. And finally, I will just say, when we think regionally, to actually create a new set of homes that have this kind of robust infrastructure is, I think, better than putting it out on the perimeter where there is no infrastructure.
So, Chris, I'm going to keep you on the hot seat here. I know Bob spoke earlier in the program about measures that are going to be taken to address, offset, anticipate sea level rise. Mm-hmm. But we're still getting a lot of questions about it. A lot of people saying, gosh, you know, this thing is so close to the water as it is, and it's landfill. What do we really think is going to happen in 25 years or 75 years?
Let me just 100% accept that challenge and what's underneath it, which is that we don't know what's going to happen in 25 or 75 years. That's really what people are saying, okay? And so the question is, how are we in the Bay Area, everywhere where we live right along the water's edge, how are we preparing for a future that we don't know? Okay. So at Treasure Island, we have embraced that. We have worked with the best thinkers that exist and our good friends at BCDC to create an adaptable plan. And what do I mean by that? So the first thing is, Bob discussed earlier, we're importing massive amounts of soil, which will lift up the footprint upon which the buildings at Treasure Island will be initially, they'll be sited. So, for example, Treasure Island will actually have elevations that are higher than some of the elevations in the North Waterfront, right? So Treasure Island will be more defensible than parts of the North Waterfront. But beyond that, one of the challenges we have as sea level rise is not that we're slowly in a bath that fills us up, but we have increased storm and overrun. So the buildings on Treasure Island are set back 300 feet from the water's edge so that we have an opportunity for, in big storm events, for overcresting and the dissipation of that storm energy. And we've created a tax structure, finally, in which people living on Treasure Island will pay a small premium in their property taxes that will be set aside in a reserve that 100 years from now, should sea level rise be greater than we now expect, because with what we expect, we think all the things I said before will be good. But should it be greater, Treasure Island will have self-funded the ability to create seawalls or levees around the perimeter. So Treasure Island is already going to have bought into the financing for a solution in ways that, frankly, those of us that live in the rest of San Francisco are going to have to face in the future.
So just as a homeowners association might charge for, you know, re-roofing or fixing the swimming pool in a condo complex, people on Treasure Island will also be paying for
reserves. That's right.
Reserves, yeah.
That's right.
Let's head to the phones again and take another call, this time from Micah in Oakland.
Hi. I just want to say I had a really special relationship with Treasure Island. When I was a kid in the early 90s, I went there to boot camp when it was an active Navy base in the Sea Cadet Corps. And then later, I moved to San Francisco, graduated from college, and lived on the officers' buildings. And then years after that, got a job on the Discovery Channel show, almost got away with it. They filmed there on that island. And just been waiting for it to turn into a metropolis that I've been hearing about for years.
Are you thinking of moving there once it's available, Micah?
No, we live in Oakland now, but I'm, you know, kind of waiting to see, you know, what San Francisco can put forward as far as, like, a city of the future and sustainability. I also want to say happy anniversary to my lovely wife, Zoe. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Micah. Let's move on to John in Alameda.
Hi. Here in Alameda, we've had a lot of fun discussions with the Navy, and they have said, for example, that an adequate cleanup is for commercial or for multifamily housing does not allow for somebody digging in the dirt to grow an organic garden, even in a common area, say in a multifamily housing area. How clean is the dirt going to be? Can you actually put a park anywhere on Treasure Island when you're done, or can you put a an organic garden in the dirt or a park, that sort of thing, where kids would be exposed to the dirt?
Bob?
Yeah. One of the elements proposed development plan for Treasure Island is a 5-acre agricultural farm that could be either you developed for shared use by the community, as well as the vision is that some of the products grown there will be available in the grocery stores that are on the island. So there are plans for agricultural use on Treasure Island. And then, again, large portions of the island will be for open space and sustainable from that perspective.
Tanu, I'm just curious from, you know, you spoke in great detail earlier about that. Is it your sense following what's been happening on Treasure Island that the remediation is going to be good enough for people to feel secure about letting their kids play in the soil?
Yeah, I haven't been following the remediation very closely, but what I do know is that it's impossible to take the soil back to levels before the Navy. So it's you can
you
achieve.
You'd have to remove it and replace it?
Yeah, I'm not an expert in that. But yeah, you can never get to a level pre-Navy level. But you can get to a level which is sort of acceptable within you know, standards that are out there. So that's pretty much where we can get to, I guess, with the cleanup.
Anything you want to add there, Chris Meany?
You know, I don't. These are issues in which, you know, sort of that you can get into, you know, technical details and you can say something. I will just say that the vast majority of the island has, as Bob said earlier, already been cleaned and gone through the process reviewed by the state of California that allows what we call free release, meaning that it's free for any use. And so I don't know this position well at Alameda here, but it sounds like maybe in Alameda it's different. But I don't really know. But I will say something else. You mentioned Mission Bay, a new neighborhood that I think you know, you don't have to feel enthusiastic about every element of it to say that this is a positive addition to San Francisco. And it was built on former rail yards. We have reached a place in the Bay Area in which when we have a very good place to do housing, we should embrace that and not say that it is the same as being out in a green field.
You're listening to Forum, and we are talking about Treasure Island and redevelopment with Bob Beck, Treasure Island Director of the Treasure Island Development Authority, Chris Meany, Managing Partner of Wilson Meany. The firm is a partner in Treasure Island Community Development, the Master Developer of Treasure Island, and Tanu Sankalia, Associate Professor in the Department of Art and Architecture and Program Director of Urban Studies for the University of San Francisco. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Rachel Miro. Well, let's head back to the comments we've been having posted on Facebook, and a lot of people want to know about how to get to Treasure Island by bicycle. In fact, one person writes, "Dang it." So I think she feels passionately about this. Bob?
Yeah, so as many people are aware, the Caltrans has been developing as part of the East Bay, the new eastern span of the Bay Bridge, a bike path to Treasure Island. And we anticipate that bike path will open all the way to Treasure Island this fall. Now, that brings you to Yerba Buena Island, and we still have a lot of work to do to improve the roadways on Yerba Buena Island to bring you down to Treasure Island. But we are working with the Transportation Authority, BATA, and Caltrans so that there will be a welcoming center and facilities when you reach Yerba Buena Island that you'll be able to enjoy the destination.
Stephanie writes, earthquake, hello. And I think this goes back to something we have touched on before, you know, seismic issues. It is landfill, after all. And you mentioned earlier, I guess, walls that would be built around the perimeter of the island to keep it from sort of dissipating into the water in the event of a major earthquake. I'm wondering if there's more to add to that.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we are engineering to improve the soil conditions on the island. You know, much of San Francisco is bay fill as well. And from that perspective, we're going to be doing more to prepare the fill on Treasure Island than has been done to prepare other areas, because we know so much more today than was previously known. But as you mentioned, we will be doing a process of soil cement mixing, which basically constructs a shoring wall type of system around the perimeter of the island to provide stability to the island itself. And then wherever vertical development is occurring, we'll be densifying that soil through a dynamic process that eliminates the potential for liquefaction of those soils and gives us a stable foundation on which to build.
Tanu, I don't want to leave you out of this conversation. We're sort of rolling to a close, but I wonder if you have any thoughts for us going forward into the future, things to watch for on Treasure Island as this city rises up or this city neighborhood rises up.
Well, I think it's still a question whether, you know, it will rise up or not. I mean, it probably will. But I think what we have to understand is, I think it's a lesson for all of us. Treasure Island's a great case study in a way. It's a space that was created by the federal government, by the Works Progress Administration, built by the Army Corps of Engineers, The infrastructure is old, very, very old. We have to consider that, and upgrades, yes. But the city didn't spend much money building it then. It was built for an airport, then became a naval base, and now it's planned for this big future development. But it's a space that has always been exceptional to the norm. There have never been people who have actually lived on Treasure Island, who've invested in it culturally, economically, socially, and so on. It was never subject to San Francisco's general plan requirements, zoning laws, while it was a military station. Then they created a special agency, the Treasure Island Development Authority, in 97, which now actually is, and Bob's the director of that, which is overseeing development. So it's been this space which has always been somehow separate from San Francisco. And it's a place where the city and the state and the government has been able to exert its power in different ways and come up with different kinds of schemes. And it has these issues, sea level rise, you know, great amounts of contamination, and, of course, earthquakes. So we've got to think about these going forward as a case study for all of us.
Well, I want to thank our guests, Tanu Sankalia, Associate Professor in the Department of Art and Architecture at the University of San Francisco, Chris Meany with Wilson Meany, the Master Developer of Treasure Island in the Treasure Island Community Development, and Bob Beck, Treasure Island Director of the Treasure Island Development Authority. Thank you so much for joining us, and please continue the conversation online. Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Mel Baker, and Susan Britt. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai, and we get online support from Amanda Font. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Rachel Miro. Thank you for joining us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.